Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the red and white bullseye, apparently in the new format, you might have to scroll down a bit, but on the upper left-hand corner, there are the words Start Here. Click on that. It'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can also download that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, and I've been using that tool to great effect for pushing 17 years now to improve my quality of my life and relationships, and using it to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. Another one of those occurred yesterday. So if you go to the archive, that's also available on whyagain.org, and look up the May 31st, 2021 episode. There's the second half of that show is stepping someone through a worksheet process. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope you do that soon and often because it raises questions for people, provides wonderful benefits in their life, and maybe they'll want to call and give us a testimonial. And if you're in that position and you want to call, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will let us know you want to talk. Today is the 152nd day of the year, and the Course in Miracles lesson from the workbook for today is, The Power of Decision is My Own. The commentary reads, No one can suffer loss unless it be his own decision. No one suffers pain except his choice elects this state for him. No one can grieve, nor fear, nor think him sick unless these are the outcomes that he wants. And no one dies without his own consent. Nothing occurs but represents your wish, and nothing is omitted that you choose. Here is your world, complete in all details. Here it is, whole reality for you. And it is only here salvation is. You may believe that this position is extreme and too inclusive to be true. Yet, can truth have exceptions? If you have the gift of everything, can loss be real? Can pain be part of peace or grief or of joy? Can fear and sickness enter in a mind where love and perfect holiness abide? Truth must be all-inclusive, if it be the truth at all. Accept no opposites and no exceptions, for to do so is to contradict the truth entirely. Salvation is the recognition that the truth is true and nothing else is true. This you've heard before, but may not yet accept both parts of it. Without the first, the second has no meaning, but without the second is the first no longer true. Truth cannot have an opposite. This cannot be too often said and thought about. For if what is not true is true as well as what is true, then part of truth is false, and truth has therefore lost its meaning. Nothing but the truth is true, and what is false is false. This is the simplest of distinctions, yet the most obscure, but not because it is a difficult distinction to perceive. It is concealed behind a vast array of choices that do not appear to be entirely your own. And thus, the truth appears to have some aspects that belie consistency, but do not seem to be but contradictions introduced by you. As God created you, you must remain unchangeable, with transitory states by definition becoming false. And that includes all shifts in feeling, alterations in conditions of the body and the mind, in all awareness and in all response. This is the all-inclusiveness which sets the truth apart from falsehood, and the false kept separate from the truth as what it is. Is it not strange that you believe to think you made the world you see as arrogance? The Creator made it not. Of this you can be sure. What can the Creator know of the ephemeral, the sinful and the guilty, the afraid and the suffering and the lonely, and the mind that lives within a body that must die? You but accuse the Creator of insanity to think he made a world where such things seem to have reality. The Creator is not insane, yet only madness makes a world like this. To think that the Creator made chaos contradicts his will, invented opposites to truth, and suffers death to triumph over life. And all of this is arrogance. Humility would see at once these things are not of the Creator. And you can see what God created not. And can you see what God created not? To think you can is merely to believe you can perceive what God willed not to be. And what could be more arrogant than this? Let us today be truly humble and accept what we have made as what is. The power of decision is our own. Decide but to accept your rightful place as co-creator of the universe, and all you think you made will disappear. What arises to awareness then will be all that there ever was, eternally as it is now. And it will take the place of the self-deceptions made but to usurp the altar to the Creator and the Creator's offspring. Today we practice true humility by abandoning the false pretense by which the ego seeks to prove it arrogant. Only the ego can be arrogant. But truth is humble in acknowledging its mightiness, its changelessness, and its eternal wholeness is all-encompassing, God's perfect gift to his beloved offspring. We lay aside the arrogance which says that we are sinners, guilty and afraid, ashamed of what we are, and we lift our hearts in true humility to ask the Creator who has created us immaculate, like unto itself, in power and in love. The power of a decision is our own. And we accept of the Creator that which we are and humbly recognize the offspring of creation. To recognize creation's offspring implies as well that all self-concepts have been laid aside and recognized as false. Their arrogance has been perceived, and in humility the radiance of the offspring's, of the Creator's offspring, in its gentleness, perfection, sinlessness, and its Father's love, his right to heaven and release from hell, these are all joyously accepted as our own. Now do we join in glad acknowledgement that lies are false and only the truth is true. We think of truth alone as we arise and spend 5 minutes practicing its ways, encouraging our frightened minds with this. The power of decision is my own. This day, I will accept myself as what my Creator's will created me to be. Then will we wait in silence, giving up all self-deceptions, as we humbly ask ourselves that creation reveal itself to us. And he who never left will come again to our awareness, grateful to restore his home to creation as it was meant to be. In patience, we wait for him throughout the day. And in patience, we hourly invite him with the words with which the day began, concluding it with the same invitation to yourself, your higher self. The Creator's voice will answer, for he speaks for you and for your Father. He will substitute the peace of creation and love for all your frantic thoughts, the truth of creation and love for self-deceptions, and the truth of creation and love for your son, your offspring, for your illusions of yourself. A little long, but definitely on point. Our negative experiences, our pain, our fear, our sadness, our view of ourselves as less than perfection of creation is a decision. Pam Grout's The Course in Miracles experiment, lesson 152, is titled All In. She quotes Will Smith, who said, "The second I decide something is done, it's done. I just have to wait for y'all to see it." Pam writes, "In lesson 152, the power of decision is my own. This reassures me that I create my own reality. It asks me to accept no opposite and no exception, for to do so is to contradict the truth entirely. This says my creative power remains unchangeable, that all transitory states are by definition false. It says the minute I make my any intention, it's real, it is viable, it is a viable creation. But until I, quote, make no exceptions, accept no opposites, close quotes, my intention stays on an invisible vibrational plane. Until I catch up vibrationally, I am unable to see and enjoy my fabulous creations. I'm a master at the first part of the equation, making intentions. But the second part, where I get out of my own way and allow love and joy and the new Tesla into my sphere of awareness, this presents a thornier dilemma. For right now, I forget my intentions. I focus instead on every brilliant, juicy, delicious thought I can. Thoughts that remotely resemble my intention and everything that doesn't. When joy is the dominant emotion, I'm able to pull dreams out of thin air like magicians pull rabbits out of hats." So there we have it. Pam Grout's work for today, The Course in Miracles lesson for today. And we have 45 minutes left. We are on air for another hour and 44 minutes. If my creating this episode worked accurately. I was a little bit behind the gun to begin the show because I had to create the show. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we have plenty of time for questions, comments, answers, soliloquies. How can we support you today? What was your weekend like? Or what is, as we had a caller yesterday who decided to do a worksheet on air, what's a worksheet you'd like to help either framing or doing? What is an exciting chapter or event in your life that you would like to discuss? I think I was mentioning yesterday that I had just been through the Thich Nhat Hanh book. It's a small book, and it is a book that has the lots of good stuff in it about working with your inner child, and the book is called Reconciliation. And lots of overlap between what Krishnamurti has observed for many, many years, what Thich Nhat Hanh observes, what the Course in Miracles experiment or lesson and workbook lessons observe. There's far more good going on in any moment than that which is disruptive or painful. And if we choose and we focus our creative energy, our mind energy, on the good, we create a better, more loving experience of our lives. And when we're stuck creating that which is unpleasant or fear-producing or anger-producing or focused on a belief in lack, then we create that experience in our lives. And it is ever thus. This is, you know, one of the core teachings that comes with the first principle in the Way of Mastery in the fifth page of that book says, here's an axiom. We want you to become aware of this axiom. There are a number of axioms of truth. But the first one is, you experience only what you have chosen. This is, nothing comes to you. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And I hasten to talk to people about this and say, that doesn't mean that I chose the hurricane that blew into town. Does mean that I choose the interpretation of and the emotions that I generate around whatever happened when the hurricane came through town. And if I choose to believe that my life is ruined and life is bad and God hates me, then I create one set of experiences. If I've survived the hurricane and I choose to be grateful for having survived and whatever I have in terms of my physical health, even if all my possessions are wiped out, I create a different experience. I have the very solid memory of watching the people who were let back into the Washington, Illinois area after the hurricane 9 or 10 years ago, or the tornado that came through there 9 or 10 years ago, wiped out a whole slew of houses in this neighborhood. And then because of all of the gas lines and electrical lines, they had to evacuate everybody. And then they had the time where they were letting the residents back in for the first time to look at you know, assess their damage and see their houses or what was left of them. And the news crew was there, a woman reporter with a cameraman, and they raced up to this family that was standing by the side of the street, right in front of a driveway, at the end of which was a big hole in the ground piled with rubble that used to be their house. And the newswoman said to them, "Oh, my goodness, tell us about this." And the husband and wife and the kids were there, and the husband and wife both just said, "We are just so grateful. We're so lucky. Everybody's safe." And the news person said, "But what about all the stuff you lost?" And they said, "Well, that's just stuff. It can be replaced. But we're all healthy, and we're just grateful, and God blessed us, and all that good stuff." Well, this is not what the reporter wanted to hear. So she hightailed it to the next-door neighbors, who were standing likewise in front of a pile of rubble that used to be their home, and asked them. And there was 90 seconds of this wailing and gnashing of teeth. "We've lost everything, all the things that can't be replaced." And again, everyone was safe and sound, but the stuff was lost. And I was just awestruck at the fabulous representation of how the very same external act, the same tornado came and leveled both houses. Both houses were completely totaled. And the very same external circumstances interpreted dramatically differently by these two families. It's the interpretation that I place on these life events and the mind energy I pour into the thoughts that make up that interpretation, that's the mechanism that creates my experience of my life events. And the more I pay attention to that, the more I realize that if I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error, the more I actively choose to look for the good, to ask how to be shown, how to be a blessing in each moment, the better my life gets. And I say this as somebody who's, you know, I often hasten to report, let me make it clear that I didn't learn these tools and all of a sudden nothing but sunshine and roses has happened in my life. Since learning these tools, I've had all kinds of life events that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And yet, my experience of them has been dramatically different than it was or would have been prior to learning these tools. So the choice of interpretation and perhaps the choice of use of the tools is dramatically or, you know, essentially important to my experience of life. I was having a session with somebody earlier today, and the session came around full cycle because the person was talking about how they don't understand so many people that they know who know about good tools, but they don't use them. And, you know, 10 or 15 years after having met these people, they're still complaining about the same things. They're still stuck in the same unproductive patterns. And then by the end of the session, we were talking about, here's a problem in that person's life, the person I'm having the session with, and they have pretty much a lifelong pattern that's negative. And I said, okay, so here are the tools. Here's the EFT tapping and breathing. Here's the Michael Rice Reality Management Worksheet. Here's the three early memories of conflict. And the ways you can use the Reality Management Worksheet once you've done the three early memories of conflict. And if you do, that lifelong pattern that you have can be shifted dramatically, can be dismantled. So that's our work. These are the tools that we have. As I say in most intros, these are, without exception, the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools that I've encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. This is it. This is the beginning of the 48th year, now that we're in the month of June. And I started doing therapy under the supervision of a licensed clinical psychologist 47 years ago. I got a bachelor's and worked in corrections for 7 years and went back to school for a doctorate in clinical psychology. Ever since I got the doctorate, I've had postdoctoral trainings required for my license. And of all those trainings and all of that, quote, education, unquote, the tools that are offered at whyagain.org are the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered, and they're available absolutely free. That's part of why I say they're so accessible. They're available at the whyagain.org website, which the last time I checked had been thoroughly revamped and updated. So if you go to that website and you explore and you find a link that doesn't work, please send an email to Jeannie Rice, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And one of the primary changes is to find the red and white bullseye, you got to scroll down quite a bit. But you can click on the word start here in the upper left-hand corner of that home page, and it takes you to the page where you can download Chapter 24 of Dr. Rice's book and all the other things we mentioned in our intro. So, you're encouraged to go and explore the new version of the website and let Jeannie Rice know if you find some links that don't work, so she can take the time to repair those links as time allows. But the same great information, the vast majority of it absolutely free. And as we know, Michael and Jeannie have been talking about other projects they've been working on for the past year and a half, 2 years, since they've not been traveling for their workshops. And the donate button is there if you're so inclined to support them financially, if you have the resources. And or there's a note that says, you know, let Michael know if you have a particular set of skills you want to donate your time, intelligence, and energy if you don't have the money. And the goal being to get these tools into the hands of every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And every little bit of assistance you provide in that endeavor is greatly appreciated. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? Today we should be having the release of an interview with Dr. Andrew Pleaner, who is an integrative psychiatrist with the same here global.org website, and that's a wonderful website also for you to check out. It's same here is in reference to the idea that statistics say 1 in 5 people will have a mental health issue in their life or be affected by mental health issues, and this website understands that that's 5 in 5. That's not 1 in 5, because everybody knows a family member or a friend who has been touched by mental health issues or had their own. And if you go to sameheareglobal.org and scroll down, I believe there are over 50 athletes and celebrities who have agreed to put their story up there. And they're pictured with the same here sign language for, you know, as in me, as in you. So the thumb pointing towards their chest and the little finger pointing out. And that's raising awareness about mental health issues. And there was a story just over this weekend about a tennis pro who decided to say, I can't tolerate the barrage of, I don't know exactly what to call it, but it's part of a professional tennis player's contract, especially the women, that they have to make themselves available for interviews by the news media after every match. And this young woman said, look, I can't do this anymore. She's had four rounds of depression just since becoming a pro, and she's got social anxiety, and she came out and very courageously said, this is the problem. I can't do this and stay sane. And, of course, because there's a contract that says she's supposed to do it, they're going to fine her, you know, $15,000 or whatever. And some people are going to come out and call her weak and stupid and Journey's Dream and Same Here Global are non-profit organizations that are actively trying to change that stigma and that the choice for silence that most people make when they have a mental health challenge or they're struggling somehow emotionally in life. And resources are available on both websites, journeysdream.org and sameheareglobal.org. And powerful tools are available at whyagain.org for managing these emotional, psychological, mental, emotional difficulties. And you can help us globally by just spreading the news of websites like journeysdream.org and sameheareglobal.org, all one word. So you may not have any money that you want to donate, but you could certainly spread the word. You can go there and scan through the websites and see what resources are available and pass the information along to anybody you think might be interested and help the cause that way. I have, I'm pretty sure I talked a little bit about this. One of the founders of Journey's Dream interview me for the Journey's Dream podcast, the On Your Mind podcast with Journey's Dream. And in it, we were talking about, you know, how did I get into this work and what drives my passion? That's one of the questions that I ask most everybody I interview on that podcast. And the thing that came to me as I was responding to these questions is that I kind of stumbled into my profession as a psychologist, and yet as I look back, there were plenty of prompts for exploring mental health issues from my family of origin, including my father, who struggled with some depression that I never knew about, but then had a bipolar episode when I was 21, and his mother, who I knew had serious depression. And so it is, everybody has had mental health issues and or been affected by them in their friends and family, and the more we can do to make it commonplace and comfortable to talk about these issues and the flexible, functional, integrative resources available for dealing with it, the better off we'll be. So area code 347, I'm trying to turn on your microphone. Who do we have?
Aliyah.
Can you give me a name?
My name is Aliyah.
Aliyah?
Yes.
How can we support you today, Aliyah?
Do you do readings?
Pardon me?
Readings?
No, readings. We do not do readings. No, we don't do readings. We teach the ancient Aramaic form of forgiveness, and we have all kinds of self-help tools available for free at whyagain.org. But we don't do psychic readings.
Okay, thank you.
So, if you want something other than a psychic reading, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's the most useful way we could spend this next 22 minutes supporting you? I was struck as I was finishing the Reconciliation book by Thich Nhat Hanh how close it is to his view of this processing work. It is to so many people that I've been trained with, and including a body journaling technique, holographic memory reprocessing, the pattern of work that we do with Faster EFT with Robert Smith, the work we do in the neuroemotional technique, the work I was trained in the bioenergetic synchronization technique, the work that's in internal family systems that talks about parts of the individual. These are all so similar as to be striking that there is this deep understanding of what we do and how we process things as human beings and how we come to believe certain patterns of thought about ourselves. And they are accessible if we're willing to turn our focus inside and use tools. And as I mentioned yesterday, if you have a comfort with the Buddhist approach, then Not Hans' book, Reconciliation, might be a very useful place for you to turn. If not, then you can go to Robert Smith's Faster EFT, or you can go to the book Holographic Memory Reprocessing. And you'll find a very similar understanding of how it is so useful for us to have conversations with and or write letters to and or do visualizations with the younger parts of ourselves that have experienced traumatic episodes. And as we do that, we can experience dramatic shifts in our processing and move from being driven by those younger traumatized parts of ourselves to being in cooperation with all parts of ourselves in dealing with life in resilient and creative and loving ways. I know that we've had several conversations about the benefit of writing a letter to a deceased ancestor or letting them write to me. Sometimes people put their pen or pencil in their non-dominant hand and let the journaling begin as though my deceased grandfather was writing to me. We've also had a lot of people have success by taking a reality management worksheet and filling it in as though I were my grandfather in one of his traumas or my mother or father when they were dealing with me in a situation where I felt like they were not coming from a space of love. And tremendous insights and energetic shifts can happen when I'm willing to recognize the parts of myself that are functioning from core beliefs and this bleeds right into Diedrich Wolsack's work where he says, you know, all of my relating to life is coming from my core beliefs. And if I'm not willing to look at those core beliefs and challenge them from an older, wiser perspective, then I continue to be driven by them. But as soon as I challenge them, as soon as I dismantle them and see them as false, they lose their power over me. So if you want to get a better life going for yourself, if you want to be able to move through life with better ease and better access to all of your life learnings and resources, go to yagen.org. Click on the link in the upper left-hand corner of the page that says Start Here. Download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Print off the worksheet or go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to the completely free and private app. And then give us a call and let us know what's your progress, what's your questions, what's your comments, what's your testimonial. My thanks to Susan for providing us another powerful example of a worksheet just yesterday. And my thanks to Jeannie Rice for her continued efforts to make those available through the website and the archives. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Kim. You said something very interesting just a minute ago about childhood and trauma, and I forget exactly what you said, but it occurred to me that perhaps our thought patterns and patterns of upset, habitual negative thinking come from that, come from events from the past that we've just formed a world view around, and we think that because some of them might have even happened before we were speaking, they become kind of solidified or gelled, and using the tools excavates or gets us into that area, help us to make changes. And I also thought it was amazing this discussion you had with a client who was thinking about other people who were stuck and not using tools, and then you gently pointed out to him that perhaps there was a little of that going on in him too. And we can all say the same, I think, even though we're using the tools, if there is a persistent kind of rubber band snapping back to a way of thinking that doesn't seem to be giving way in spite of doing work, we're not doing enough of the work or the right kind of work. Or I think of Pam Grout, and her daughter died, and Pam Grout manages to find such joy in her life and to have a positive, active relationship with this daughter who is no longer in the flesh. And I think, what is it about her? Is this just a decision that she has made, or has she done massive amounts of work, or did she not need to do the work, or was she born under a lucky star? And I'm not really making sense, I think, with my talking, but a lot of the things you said just make me wonder.
Well, you know, a lot of it is, well, let's look at it this way. It's the things that I come to believe as I live through these different life events that live on in me and continue to affect my life. The past does not continue to affect me except as I am holding on to and pouring my mind energy into beliefs about the past and what it meant.
Yeah.
Right?
That's good. Yep.
In one sense, the past doesn't exist, but it does in our minds. I remember quoting the David White. He says, you know, the Irish have this saying, the thing about the past is it's not the past. Because as soon as I start talking about it, I load it into my mind, and I'm living from and processing the present moment based on those beliefs from the past. So I'm making it very much alive for me in this moment. But that's the only place it's alive, is in my thought process.
Yeah, that's true. That's good.
And the other thing is, you know, I don't know if you've ever read much Krishnamurti, but if you read The Flame of Attention, his book, he is so clear about there is only what is. And yet we create almost all of our pain and suffering by trying to pretend that what is, the truth of what is, isn't or doesn't need to be or is going to change. And yet there is just what is.
The flame of intention or attention?
Attention.
Attention. Okay, thanks.
And, you know, Guy Finley, among many others, have pointed out that the vast majority of my pain and suffering in life comes from trying to pretend that what's true isn't true, and what's not true or what's false is true or could be true one day. Well, Krishnamurti was talking about that decades before Guy Finley was. And in a way it strikes my eye and ear as almost identical to what the Course in Miracles is calling us to in the most recent lessons, including today's. That the truth is just the truth. The truth is life is magnificent. You're part of life. You're magnificent. You know, your essence is as it was created to be. And all of the stuff that goes on about judgment and sin and shame and guilt is all part of the error of human thought, and, you know, many pieces of it in different religions are part of the need for control and manipulation of people. But the truth is, you're a magnificent creation of life, of the extension of the creative energy and form. That's how you were created, and that's how you remain to be. It's the core of Michael Rice's teaching. It's there in the worksheet. The basic premise of this work is that your true nature is love. You want to know what that is? Hold a newborn infant. Get the experience of that energy. And in truth, that's all that's happening. In truth, every time I focus on something other than that, I'm distorting my perception. And I'm buying into the cultural training, or I'm buying into the false beliefs that I downloaded when I was younger, and I was surrounded by people who didn't know their true nature as love. They weren't acting from their awareness that they're part of the creation. And so some painful and upsetting things have happened. And when those things happen, and then I download a belief that says, this is about me, you know that routine, right? My poor mother got saddled with two such bratty kids, etc. When we download those negative beliefs, until they are dismantled, they are primary forces in the creation of our perception of life, our experience of life.
Right. Well, okay. From a very personal angle, I feel as if I have gotten to the point where I can stay really well a lot longer than I've ever been able to before. But I still have this belief that this is a fragile little plateau I'm on, and I better watch out. And the littlest thing can threaten that. I feel like a very unsturdy person some of the time. I guess it's just because all of those beliefs are lurking around the edges, and I've had a good look at them, but they're still...
I wish we had the instant replay. Right. You can go back in the archives and hear it, but I wish we had instant replay right now, because you just defined it perfectly. You still hold the belief that you're on a fragile platform. And because you hold that belief, that's creating your experience of being on a fragile platform.
Yeah.
So that's it. You're going to create this experience of life being fragile and you being in danger of being hurt, and that's going to be your experience until you question and dismantle that false belief. And, you know, it's as understandable as, you know, getting wet when it rains, because you had these experiences in your life where your mother was not relating from the knowledge that she was whole and complete and that she could achieve whatever she needed to achieve in her life without hurting anyone. She didn't get that from her parents, so she didn't know it, and she didn't hand it on to you. So you downloaded these beliefs that life is dangerous and you're fragile and you can be hurt and that you're not worthy. And as long as those beliefs remain rooted and unchallenged in you, they will drive your experience of life. And every time you choose to engage a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet or Diedrich Wolsack's six-step reality or forgiveness work, you go in, you identify the false belief and the younger version of yourself that came to those conclusions. You have empathy for that younger self. You understand exactly how that false belief came to be. And you question it from a higher source, whether it's you're calling Holy Spirit in to help you or you're just using your adult experience of life and mature coping mechanisms to reevaluate it. Once it's dismantled, once you see it as false, those negative beliefs about yourself are no longer creating your experience of life. But as long as you hold on to them, they are creating your experience of life.
So is it a once you get it, you've got it, and that's it? Or do you have lapses? I mean, which is normal?
Yes, it's not a once you get it, you've got it. No, but when you see the false nature of a belief that comes from a specific situation where you downloaded that negative belief, you may not have to go to that same negative memory a lot of times, or you might, right? Or it might have woven itself into a whole network of thought and beliefs about yourself that you may have to go back and revisit and question and see the false nature of it many times before it's completely dismantled.
Right.
You know, if Michael were here, he'd say, how often do you have to do it? 77 times 70, an infinite number of times until it's complete.
Tim, before I forget, how do you spell Wolzak?
Wolsak. His website is choose-again.com.
Okay. I tried to look him up and couldn't find it, but I didn't spell it right. Okay.
Diedrich Wolsack, but the way to find it, the most reliable, is choose-choose-again.com.
Okay, good.
And just like Michael and Jeannie's work, a lot of it's available free. You can download the six-step process, get information about him. You can read the six-step process right there and then click on a link that says download a printable version of it. And it is as close as you will find to Michael's work without having the cancel the goal policy or part of it. But
Did you find this? How did you find him?
So, Matthias from Germany, who listens to the show, said a friend of his had him listen to some YouTube videos with Diedrich, and he sent me an email and said, "Oh my gosh, you sound just like Diedrich. Are you ripping him off? I haven't heard you mention Diedrich."
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And so I reached out to Diedrich, and he agreed to be interviewed, and that interview should air next Tuesday, a week from today.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, good. I had a question about the Pam Grout thing, too. It was something unclear, but I'm trying to find it.
You mean today's now. Lesson?
Yeah.
That's mystifying to me because her lesson's pretty simple.
Yeah, she says, thoughts that remotely resemble my intention and everything that doesn't. She says, I'll go back a little bit. For right now, I forget my intentions. I focus instead on every brilliant, juicy, delicious thought I can. Thoughts that remotely resemble my intention and everything that doesn't. I just didn't understand what you meant, everything that doesn't.
Well,
why
because
do that?
When joy is the dominant, keep put that together with when joy is the dominant emotion, I'm able to pull dreams out of thin air. So she's focusing on joy. Brilliant, juicy, delicious thoughts. Thoughts that remotely resemble my intention and everything that doesn't, as long as it's brilliant, juicy, and delicious. If it leads to joy, I'm going to focus on that.
Good. Okay. Got it. Thanks.
Right? I'm not going to be so focused on my intention, and create, you know, this intensity of focus that is no longer joyful. She's going to go for the joy.
Okay. All right. I see. Thanks. Well, it's almost time to stop, but I wanted to say, you said something yesterday about letting go of the goal of my mother having a good sleep. That has been the most fruitful part of all of our discussions so far about that. Somehow, I was still worrying about her, and it was just great to not worry about her, even though, you know, she's no longer in the body anyway, but
well, but the key of it was in your worksheet, right? And that goal had to be in there for you because when she didn't have a good night's sleep, you feared for your life.
Well, I didn't even connect that so much. It's just that I felt very badly for her and realized I'd probably been worried about her sleep for a long time. Anyway, it was just helpful. Thanks. Your intuition is so is good. Helpful.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I'm very glad that you were calling yesterday to do that worksheet and that it was useful. So I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. And thank you again for the call, as always. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Hey, Dr. Kim, thank you. I'll have to look up those links, too.
I don't know if you realize this, but I had to create the show for today. So.
Oh, no. Okay.
So I don't know that it took me several attempts. It wanted to have just an hour-long show, but it looks like we have another hour of the show left for you and Michael, so.
Okay.
Have a wonderful
I will
show.
Go out there. I was out of it yesterday most of the day, so I didn't. It just slipped by me. I will go out there and create for the next couple weeks. I apologize.
All right. No problem. Take care.
Thanks. All righty. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, June the 1st, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here with us. To keep moving this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness forward in a way that hopefully makes it understandable and functional for you. Our greatest desire is that you are able to acquire this skill and to utilize it effectively in your life to change the dynamics of any situation that are not supportive of your human life. And our basic thesis is that if you hold a newborn child and you tap into the essence of that newborn, you get to taste what human life is. And we're here to support you in experiencing yourself as that awesome presence of love that humans are designed to be. You know, the fall from grace was a fall from the knowing of who we are into a belief that is just in error, that you know, never belonged in the human system. And when I start to remember who I am and I start to function out of who I am, all of the drama and trauma of life tends to start to fade away and dissipate, and we move into living life on a creative level. Probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And if we're creating unconsciously, then we're creating out of dynamics that we're not aware of. And the unconscious dynamics that people tend to create and hide from themselves are usually those based in hostility or fear. And with hostility or fear as a guide, life gets pretty crazy. So we're here to support the forgiveness of all hostility and fear. And that doesn't mean we're going to invite you to let hostility and fear off the hook for what's happening in your life. The word forgiveness is more accurately described with the word removal than the Greek idea of letting somebody off the hook. And so if you confront some form of hostility or fear in your mind or your life, our objective here is to recognize that that can be forgiven, removed. And when it's removed, then human life naturally shows up as it is. And again, if you hold that newborn, you know that it's this awesome presence of love that we are designed to live in. And you know, the generosity that comes from being, if it's truly alive in one, holds the space for the weakening, for the throwing out, for putting an end to everything that's based in hostility or fear. The non-being mind would rather hold on to its hostilities and fears and, of course, find somebody else to blame and somebody else to separate from and, you know, all the dynamics that go on in that arena. So we're here to shift out of the energies that the Greeks labeled as sin, and sin being in Aramaic actually an archery term that means off the mark. And if you're on the archery range and you fired at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell sin. And that all that would mean would be you're off the mark. And anything that we do based in hostility or fear is off the mark, although, you know, when the ego gets behind an off-the-mark idea, oh, the atrocities it can pull to make it real, to make it true about somebody other than the person perceiving it is always interesting. And perception is a really interesting part of this game of life as well, and recognizing that literally the world that we see, it's a world generated between our ears. It's a construct of the mind, and it is a reflection of the mind energy held in the mind. The objective, if you find yourself in some form of hostility or fear, is to forgive. As to that hostility or fear, to dissipate and disappear the energy of what we call the non-being self, so that we're restored to the truth of who we are. And the deeper my mind is able to go in holding the space for that, the deeper I will get to experience that, and the more profoundly those who I surround myself with are going to get to taste of that objective. And we're here to support that. So if we go to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, we're into page 75 if you're reading along with us. And this chapter is off the mark. And we're talking to this character, Richard, who is this recalcitrant kind of guy, and he's working through some guilt issues at this point in this conversation. And so we're informing him of different qualities of energy and how to move through those things. So I've just completed the idea with Richard that we're working to teach the inquiring mind how to forgive and release itself from its sins, its errors, and its guilt. It would be accurate to call the integrative form of energy holy, rooted in the word whole, that which supports and builds the human system. The disintegrative we might call evil. Evil is bisha in Aramaic, and another archery term. Sin is missing the bullseye, and evil means off the target. Missing the target altogether. So if you're on the archery range and you fired and you didn't even hit the target, the word evil would be applied to inform you of your miss. And of course, what we're looking to do is to get the human mind back on target and step into functioning truly as the presence of love, as we're designed to function. So an evil life in Aramaic is a life where one continuously engages in disintegrative energies, thus defiling one's own temple, creating disease and self-destruction. In Aramaic, there was no moral component to the instruction. Stay away from an evil person. It was pure pragmatism. If you associate with those who engage in disintegrative, self-destructive, quote-unquote, evil acts, their actions will soon appear normal. Making a behavior appear normal is the first step in persuading others to do the same. Richard looked relieved. When I was a kid, they always threatened me with death because I had sinned. What about that part of the Bible? Well, the reason you were told about sin in a threatening way was projection. Those who promote that type of interpretation are caught in their own sin, which is fear. Fear clouds the minds and destroys the bodies of those who engage in it. That is why in the Aramaic scriptures, we're told that the first law was that of love. And so in Aramaic, the word law is, it's not about some being in the sky that made up rules and told you you better work this way, you better do this, 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 or that. But the word law is a word that describes in Aramaic simply how this energy field, this energy system works, how the energetic dynamics flows, and what the impact is of those energies that are based in hostility or fear. So we're looking for restoration, to recover the truth of being, the truth of who we are, and to live out of that state of active present love 24/7, 365. And cleaning up the mind, if its habits have been formed based in hostility or fear, is a major part of the work that we're here to do. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation and to assist us in taking it further and further afield and literally taking the energy of forgiveness, the understanding of forgiveness, out to the world on a global scale, looking at it as it was originally taught in Aramaic, the removal of energetic patterns that never belonged. This idea of forgiving another is a total falsity. Forgiveness has nothing to do with anybody else but yourself. If you find yourself engaged in some form of hostility or fear, then by forgiving, you get to remove the hostility and fear. And as you do that, you're restored to the truth of who you are. And we are here to support total, complete restoration of all of humanity. So we're glad you're part of the conversation. And what's on your mind today? How can we support you? If you're out there in listener land and you have a question or a thought for us, if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you dial into the show at the phone number 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And if you push one, that'll raise a hand in the control panel. Jean will greet you by your phone number, and we'll be saying hello. So, Ms. Jean, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So if someone presses one, you're first in line. We have 48 minutes.
Let's make some noise.
Yeah.
Five, six, three, nine, 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 three, five, eight, one. Let's have a conversation. Not everybody at once, though. Can't handle every caller at the same time. So go ahead, push one. Let's talk about it. What's on your mind? Come on now. I know somebody's out there with a thought or a question.
We had a hand go up.
Oh, great.
Area code 417. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Jeannie and Michael. This is Judy from Missouri.
Why, young
How
lady?
Are you
good
all?
To hear your voice. We're good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I moved over here to this particular area for a little while to shut down my storage unit, which I've had since 2000, and get rid
right.
of all the stuff. All the stuff that I've been paying for the last, 21 years? And,
that's a long time.
I know. And while I'm going through this stuff, I'm finding that I have stuff that is surfacing from 21 years ago that I'm really doing some major moving here.
Oh, wow.
And,
nice.
Yeah. So there was this podcast on YouTube yesterday that I was watching, and it was a podcast that was they call him the minimalist. He lives on the
right.
on minimal things, you know, getting rid of all of his
right.
stuff. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do, is just get rid of everything that is not essential, that has no real value, and as far as survival and enjoying my life. And my brother, last year, his children, he's got two or three that's not grown yet. They went to live with the mother down in Florida, and they're running back
right.
and forth. They'll come live with him a while, and they'll go down there and live with a while. He took and gave the kids, like, all of his tools and everything, the stuff that he felt like that they could use, loaded it up and took it down there to him. And he come back, and he put a sign on his front yard, and he said, "Free stuff." And he said he just let everybody come in, whoever came up there, and they could just go through the house and get what they wanted. He'd already gotten out what he needed, and everything else was just going out of his life, and he did it in one day. Well, maybe a couple.
Wow.
And because he lives over there on the south side of Joplin, there's a lot of traffic on his road. But anyway, when he did that, and I felt it, because that was my goal here, is just to get rid of everything except for just what I needed. And I felt it. And when I was watching this podcast yesterday, one of the goals that they had was to start with just get rid of one thing a day, and the second day get rid of two things and keep going, you know, as far as you can. I got to thinking, well, this is just like the worksheets. And it's the baggage we've been carrying around with us. And but there is another level on this that I want to just kind of highlight for a minute. And that is that it's all of it is in our file folders, the whole kit and caboodle. If we live long enough, we go through everything. However, there's just certain things that get triggered to open. And so we could spend our whole lives doing the worksheets and still not get to it all. But what it does allow us to do is to be able to function out of love each day of our lives if we just clean up the clutter. And that's the same way it is with the physical stuff, because it represents the spiritual stuff that we've been hanging on to. And I was just, and my goal was to, like, shut down the storage unit and clean all the clutter out. That way I could use the energy that I was holding, this clutter in place, to do my healing. And it was like just taking my energy from one space to another and making it more valuable. And I
sounds like you're using your energy consciously.
Striving to do that. And sometimes it just works 100%. Another time it's a little less. But, yeah. And so I thought, well, the comparison of these things was so, years ago, someone had told me that, in one of the classes that I took, that when you drive by a yard and you see all this clutter out in it, that is just stuff that they haven't resolved yet. It's just a physical manifestation of stuff they haven't resolved yet. And I thought, and that, over the years, I paid attention to that in my life and how valuable it is to have this work to clean out the clutter every day, because every day there's going to be clutter. And I want to thank you all for all the work. I mean, hours and hours and years and years. And Dr. Tim, too. I listen to his show, too. And
awesome.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the work.
Well, I acknowledge your willingness. Watched you do your work for a lot of years. You were at Heartland the first year we opened, 1989, and you've been a regular Heartland attendee for 30 years. And it's been miraculous to watch you do your work, confront things, deal with things, and move through and out the other side. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. And congratulations to you all on your new website. I'm getting looking forward to exploring that, and
I'm still working on broken links and things, so there's still a lot to do on it, but at least it's live.
Jeannie, I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I do not know how you can balance and manage everything you're doing, but I know that you're a good woman. And you truly are giving your all there. And I really appreciate that as another woman, you know.
Thank you.
And we are blessed by you.
Yeah, you've really found your purpose there. I mean, one of your purposes. But, yeah. And I just, I acknowledge you as a wonderful support to Michael and the work and the people that call in and even venturing out into your own space to create your own work classes and workshops and everything. That's wonderful. Well,
thanks.
So right now I'm cleaning the clutter on different levels. And I just want to acknowledge y'all and thank you for the worksheets and all the time and all the classes. Oh, my. It was like being in college 24/7 when we were at Heartland. We had a lot of good times. We went down and swam in the lake a lot and had a lot of good conversations, and the food was wonderful, and the company was absolutely marvelous. Thank you, thank you.
It has been, and it is a pretty amazing journey, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So I'm going to get off of here so somebody that needs to talk can get on there with you.
All right, young lady. Thank you for saying thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, blessings. Bye-bye. All right, our calling number, 563-999-3581. Call that number, you'll be listening to the show on your phone, and when you push 1, hand will go up in the control panel, and we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
I will say, as far as the changes in the app go, if you'll just be patient, hopefully within the next 48 hours. I was up at 6:30 this morning with India, and we've just about got the Android fixed, and then they're working on the iPhone. And he said hopefully within 48 hours we'd have them both up and running. So if you run into a glitch on that, right now the biggest thing is that it wouldn't let you print or save. But then there were a few things in the middle where it was supposed to bring your answers forward to the next section in the app, and it wasn't doing that. So I think we've got all of that handled too. So just give us 2 more days or 3 more days, and hopefully it'll be running smooth again.
Sweet. Your work on that is awesome, sweetie. You bless us all.
Thank you.
Mm. And we are also blessed by this little one, Ari Rain, who's with us today. And we acknowledge her in our lives and in the work that we're doing, the way she's taught us to function out of love, as love, and demonstrated her existence as love. It's just amazing to watch as she grows and expresses, and we are so blessed. So 563-999-3581, push 1. We'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
It's all quiet. Nobody has a question. We have 36 minutes. We have plenty of time. Oh, a hand just went up. Area code 314. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Michael and Jeannie, it's Doug. How are you?
Hi, young man.
Hey, young man. Welcome.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've been doing a little cleansing.
Yeah. You hear that in my voice?
I hear it. Yes, sir. Pretty clear.
Yeah, that's been going on for, went on for 30 days steady, 32 days, and then it eased up for a while, and thought I was better, and now I'm back in more of it. So, not too bad this time around. So, yeah, I thought.
What's on your mind today, Doug?
There are so many things I could talk about, Michael, and it's like, I feel like my life is just, I'm just not very pleased with it, but I find this tremendous resistance to, you know, really, I mean, sometimes I talk about some things, but it feels like, oh, you know, you should take advantage of this quiet space in the show. And what I decided is, well, at least I can call in and talk about my reluctance to talk about my life, because if I were talking to the 10 or 12 or however many people may be listening, or 100 or 200 or whatever it might be, but one time today and that would be it, you know, I would be like, okay, I'm probably willing to do that. But I know that it's, I'm talking to the whole world forever. And I've got issues with, you know, it's like so I thought, well, maybe I can process that, you know, because at least that's an engagement, and that's, I realized that I just feel like I'm too much, and what's wrong with me is too much for everybody, and I think I realized as I thought about that, that's, you know, it deals that way with Diane. It's like she doesn't want to hear about it. She doesn't want to hear about all my, you know, it's like it's too much. It's just too much. So maybe I have this idea I'm too much, or, but whatever. It's an open question I have a worksheet in front of me. I could do that. Or if you just want to, you know, it's like, okay, so I feel like to share what's wrong in my life is scary and makes people think less of me and, you know, blah, 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 like that. So I'm open to suggestions if you have any.
Yeshua gave us a pretty interesting statement of how creation works when he said, let thine eye be single and thy body will be filled with light. And what we realize with that statement is he's talking about physics. He's talking about what comes about in our worlds. And if our singular focus is on what's wrong, then the tendency is going to be to move into generating more of what's off base. Where you could pick a different point of focus into the world of what's right about me, what's moving in the right direction, what's my focus need to be in order to bring forth fullness in my life, rather than what's wrong with me. And you might look at it as a power person dynamic. You know, chances are this habit of looking at what's wrong was a focus that came from a power person, and perhaps doing some forgiveness work around that power person would allow you to just let that focus on what's wrong start to slip away and move into the arena of what's your contribution to it? What's your focus going to be to uplift yourself and uplift the world?
That sounds very good. Yeah, I like that idea. It feels powerful. You know, I mean, I guess I wrote that down. What does my focus need to be in order to bring forth my contribution in life? I think that's that's extraordinary. You know,
Have you looked lately at the purpose exercise from Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment?
No, I haven't.
I might suggest that you pull that exercise out, pull that worksheet out. You can get it from the website under Worksheets to Print. The title of it's Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. And grab the Purpose worksheet and maybe look back, you know, in your Laws of Living book, the last time you did Laws of Living, we did that purpose exercise. You might just dig that out, have a look at it, and redo it one more time with current events in terms of, you know, what is it that I'm here for? What do I enjoy doing? What am I good at? And what's my vision for the world? And to shift my mind into focusing on those three arenas is going to tend to solidify my energy as a creative being living on purpose, rather than wandering in the minefield of a power person dynamic that told me there was something wrong with me, therefore, you know, being hooked on what's wrong and what's out of place. Might be something that assists you to shift into more of what are you really here for? What's your real purpose? You know, what do you remember? If you think back, it's usually when we were much smaller, and we looked around at the world and said, this is not what life is about. What do you remember when you looked around and you saw what the world was doing? What do you remember knowing life was really about? Do you have a recall of that?
Well, I don't recall feeling like I in this instant remember thinking to myself, this is not what life is about. But I do feel like having a strong early sense that life is about, expressing enthusiastically, entheos, I think is how you say it. Happiness and, positivity and one's just the creative impulse of the divine, just being joyful in growth and learning and expression and service and love. I think that's probably always been the root purpose that I've felt about life.
So what do you need, of course, to forgive to get back to that focus?
What do I need to forgive to get back to that focus?
Mm-hmm. Good breath.
Yeah.
What's the emotion that's there?
Well, there's sadness for sure. I mean, what's more than obvious to me, and I'm willing to say, is that my fall from being able to do that or doing that, so to speak, in this cycle of my life, is very clearly has to do with my relationship, the sense of losing it, the sense of it not going the way I want, and all my energy, like trying to save it or transform myself to be what I need to be to keep it. That sort of thing. Like, it's just that I was doing what I wanted to be doing at a higher level than I've ever achieved in my life 5 years ago.
Right.
3 years, from 8 to 5 years ago, I felt like I was really expressing my purpose, but financially that wasn't sufficiently solvent. And when that stopped, Diane and I started down a path of, well, what are we going to do next? From my point of view, she was increasingly dissatisfied with me, and so that seemed like it led me into chasing her. Trying to accommodate her as she moved more and more into independent behavior, doing what she wanted to do, live where she wants to live, take her life on independently of the partnership that we had. And so in that experience, I lost, I feel like I lost my own purpose, and I feel like I don't know how to. I mean, there's been actually a conscious recognition that, probably the best thing I can do right now is just forget about that and try and live and establish my own purpose, here. But it's not entirely emotionally palatable to me. I feel a great deal of grief about the loss of that relationship and the partnership and all of that. And I think that that's I'm sliding it into.
So what do you need to do to put it back on track? If it's gone off track, what's the behavior that's going to pull it back on track? And what's the thought disorder about self that's crept in? And it sounds like, you know, there's some sort of a thought disorder about self that you're broken and that it's not recoupable. So what do you need to do?
What is it? You use the word, what do you need to do to put it back on track? Are you referencing the relationship?
To put your relationship back on track. You know, it sounds like a thought disorder about self has crept in, and somehow that thought that you're broken means you can't have a really wondrous, fulfilling relationship. And my offer would be that that's strictly the result of a thought disorder. And so
if
you identify that.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's the result of my feeling like I let's see. Well, some of the thoughts are I'm not enough for her. I'm not what she wants. It's the result of trying to you know, well, if I could change my partner thought, you know, it's like if she accepted me, everything would be better. You know, it's like I feel like, but I recognize that's just.
Is it she that has to accept you, or is it you that has to accept you?
Well, I fully recognize that's a nonsense thought. You know, it's not. It's like I. My spiral is in sensing and trying to feeling like having her accept me and be my partner is more important than anything else. And then trying to tailor my life to that and finding that I'm not able to or that it takes me off of, you know, it's like I literally shut off everything else out of my life So that's why I alluded earlier that perhaps the best thing I could do is just forget about that, try and establish my own life here, you know, reestablish my own life without thinking mm-hmm. about that, pursuing that. And then I might restore myself to some of the qualities and conditions that would restorative in the end to that relationship. But I feel like I'm not sure if I'm avoiding the exact question you're asking me or not. I'm going to ask you to redirect it if you think it's appropriate. Redirect me. You know, but basically, I'm successful and happy in life. I need to be enterprising and earning money and serving people and feeling fulfilled, you know. Independently in my life, it seems, that would put my life back on track.
Okay.
I believe.
So how about a mind shifter? You work in that direction.
All right.
It's safe, healing, and easy for me to behave in a way that brings joy and aliveness. Into my relationship with Diane. Good breath. Mm-hmm. What happens as you think that thought?
I'm just finishing writing it.
Okay.
paving away. I've been joy, aliveness in my relationship with Diane. Well, the first thoughts that come to mind are, I can't make her embrace me. There's nothing I can do to impact her attitude is towards me. So then I also think that there's another thought that was that I can only do that by giving up myself. The next one is I've tried that and it's failed. That's a hopeless pursuit.
So it sounds like the underlying thought you're holding is that the relationship is irretrievably broken.
Well, the underlying thought I'm holding is that to restore myself to being, I probably need to get out of it and away from the relationship. That it, you know, or that the relationship is the, attempting to restore the relationship is the source of my loss of self. And, in a, you know, it's a pursuit of something that I have no control over. It's like I feel that way. I have no control over it. I can't control her opinions towards me or her, you know, responses towards me. Or, you know, I feel like it's out of my hands. You know, her response to me is not something that I can govern. So to continue to make that the most important thing in my life, it doesn't serve me. Doesn't seem to be. You know, I it results in grief, sorrow, and sadness. So
here's my offering. Remember our definition of denial. Whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's happening inside of me, I'm going to dissociate with the cause of what's going on. And my offering is your grief and pain is not a result of what's happening in that relationship. It's a result of what's happening inside of you. When I tell myself I'm in this state because of that, I'm really lying to myself. I'm in this state because of what's going on inside of me internally. And when I can directly confront that, then I can change that.
Yes. Certainly. I'm writing that down. Okay, so clearly... Clearly, my grief and pain is not a result of what's happening in that relationship, but of what is happening inside of me. And I fully agree with that. You know, it's like my
if you think whatever back in your life,
well,
prior to your relationship with Diane.
You know, it's about trying to please the power person in my life or the love in my life or my mother or my grandmother or my father or, you know, anybody that's important to me that I want to love me. You know, in order to get this person to care about me, how do I need to behave? You know, I mean, I need them. I need, you know, like one of those core thoughts down there is I need their approval and love to be okay. You know,
do you really think you need their approval and love or your own?
Pardon?
I say, do you really think you need their approval and love or is it really your own that you need?
Well, the thought, the error thought. that has been with me all my life is that I need their approval. You know, it's my power person. You know, I need my power person's approval to survive and be okay.
Okay.
You know, clearly.
So the next worksheet I'd suggest you do is you cancel your need for anyone's approval. And you clean up that file in your mind that holds disapproval from, you know, all the figures that you've mentioned. And as you remove that energetic dynamic, you might just be surprised it'll dissipate and disappear from your relationship with Diane, because it'll disappear from your own unconscious mind.
So the worksheet is on dissipating my need for approval. Is that what it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cancel my need to be approved of.
Okay.
Because as long as I hold an underlying belief that I could never be approved of, it really doesn't matter what I do. It will never show up until I address that underlying belief.
And the underlying belief that I need it,
mm-hmm.
right?
That you're broken without it, that you're not good enough, or, you know, whatever the variation on the theme is, whatever the thought disorder is.
Okay.
So maybe so another mind shifter. I deserve total affirmation and approval just because the Creator put the breath of life in me. And the truth is, the only requirement for you to be approved of is, did the Creator give you breath? Then you've got the stamp of approval from the ultimate authority.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna go back to one line ahead of that, back up just a little bit because I wanted to write this down.
Okay.
I know I can go back and listen to the show, and of course I will, but for approval to show up, you said for approval to show up, something has to be cleared out of me.
Only thing you need. Yeah, and it's the thought disorder that you don't deserve it. Like who it's probably a power person thought. And you were in a receptive state and bought it, that whatever it is that quote-unquote is wrong with you is a lie. You deserve love and approval just because the Creator put the breath of life in you.
For approval to show up.
Nothing else is
wrong. Thing needed is to clean and clear the thought that I don't deserve it, that I don't deserve approval.
Correct.
I have the essence of it, right?
Yes, and it might be many variations on the theme. It might be approval, it might be affirmation, it might be acceptance, you know, whatever the core of it is.
Yeah, that's very good, because I can feel that one running back deep, running long, running, you know, running early, like, you know, I can feel being told I don't deserve it unless, you know, it's like I told I don't deserve it unless unless I'm doing what the power person wants. I am what the power person
wants. Yeah. Does this go back to early church experiences?
It goes back probably first to my mother let me mute this a second, because so, just 1 second, please.
Sounds like lungs need to open. Let go.
Yeah, I needed to remove some. Some mucus there. Okay, so yes, it goes back to early sense of very, very clear with my mother that, you know, if I'm behaving in the way that she wants, then I'm okay and I'm worthy of approval. And if I'm not, then I'm absolutely not, you know, not worthy, not okay, not worthy of approval at all. I'm the little life scum of the earth. It's not doing the right thing, right? So, and I think that I can feel that very strongly there. You know, I need to, I mean, I'm going to certainly be put down or hit or, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm going to be the brunt of her extreme anguish and displeasure if I'm not behaving in a way that pleases her. And I think that certainly transmits over into the church, because you know, that was all about behaving appropriately in order to get God's approval. So no concept really that, well, there was a concept that we are also all divine and we're all God's children, but that there's a gap in the potency, at least received by me, that makes me approved all the time. You know, it's like that's not, you get your approval by complying with the commandments and rules and laws and doing what God says. You don't get it by just because God
is all fake,
life.
Doug. It's all fake, Doug. The whole story is fake.
Yeah.
Creator,
sure.
The creator is simply the active presence of love that embraces the creation. It isn't based on whether you behave appropriately. I know there's been a whole theology made up about that. Active present love only knows to embrace. It doesn't even know disapproval. And you know, we've heard the conversation, you know, God can't sin or entertain sin. It's true. It's just pure being. It's just the pure presence of love. We set up this whole set of conditions and made it, well, if I do this and if I do that, then I'll be worthy. And the fact is, you were worthy the instant the Creator gave you breath. That's all.
Well, yeah, I mean, intellectually, that's clearly become obviously true. And, you know, I like very much what you said, the Creator is the active presence of love that embraces all creation. That feels like a very powerful expression of that. And I, you know, it's like, it's more than obvious to me at this point that I am the Creator. I am part of the essence of life. So of course life isn't going to hate itself. You know, love is what I am. Love. It's not going to despise or judge part of itself, but it is obviously, I mean, I deeply appreciate the fact that these thought disorders are playing out in me, and yep.
So whose disapproval thoughts are the ones interfering with the presence of love? Do you think they're the Creator's or yours? My offering is they don't belong to the Creator. The Creator doesn't live in that arena.
That's a men's story, and men's wish to create other men or to control other men.
Yeah, the creator doesn't have disapproval thoughts. Clearly, they're mine, and actually, you know, I mean,
they can be forgiven.
You know, they are those of my mother, the church, Diane, you know,
Doug.
Others, everyone, other people, all others, you know, all others, others. You know, so I am, you know, I do fear those disapproval thoughts of others. You know, and God, because part of me thinks that, you know, it's like that part of me, but is the error in my fear of their disapproval thoughts? I mean, or is it that I have them inside of me or what exactly here? Because I feel like the first thing that comes to mind as I look at this is, well, what I need to do is cancel my fear of the disapproval thoughts of others. You know, it's just like, well, let them disapprove. Which brings me right back to my reluctance originally to speak here. You know, it's like, okay, so if I'm going to air all my, you know, all my pain or whatever, just not looking too good, everyone's going to disapprove of me. You know, so I don't want to do that.
So, Doug, we're here simply holding the space for you. There's no thought of disapproval in any of this conversation.
Right. There is the thought that I have that.
Go ahead, say that again.
Only by having others' approval, I'm writing it down too because this seems important to me. Can I get needed support companionship
caring
and survive? So that's clearly straight from my mother as well, or my power person. You know, it's like only by having others' approval. So it's like when I think, well, why do I need others to approve of me? Because if they don't approve of me, they're not going to, you know, want anything to do with me. I mean, why would, and that is the essence of how I frame my present situation in relationship. Like, she does not approve of me, therefore I don't have, you know, I don't have the support that I need there. I don't have, you know, the desire to engage with me. You know, if that results in...
And there's the thought that needs to be shifted, the thought disorder that needs to be shifted. And the phone is going to cut us off in a few seconds. We're down to just the last few seconds. So it's just...
What is the
hold
thought
the space and
please,
be with it.
What is
that
the thought that needs...
I can't survive. I can't survive and get what I need if I don't have others' approval.
Thank you. Yeah, that's it. Great. Okay.
So we're breathing with you, and if it's appropriate, let's take this call up tomorrow. Continue.
Super awesome. Thank you for the support.
All right, sir, we appreciate you. Cherish you, my friend.
All right.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.